It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Hello again, happy Friday, and welcome to the broadcast. The name is hard to say, but the storm is on its way. Nonetheless, big storm brewing in the Atlantic. It is eyeballing the Atlantic seaboard. Fox News meteorologist Janice Dean.
People need to be prepared, especially right now, the Carolinas, because we think the direct impact of Isaias is going to be the Carolinas, but Florida is not out of the woods just yet.
Isaias expected to hug the Atlantic coastline until it reaches the Outer Banks of North Carolina, where it could roar ashore late this weekend. New England states will start to feel the impact of the storm early next week.
So we'll be talking about Isaias, unfortunately, for many days.
The storm knocked out power, took down trees, and unleashed flooding that spawned landslides yesterday in Puerto Rico.
We're dealing with a storm that's probably just only at 36 to 48 hours away. So we're gaining some confidence that the core of the system could stay a little to the east of South Florida, but it could get really close for Central and Northeast Florida.
That's Hurricane Specialist John Cangelosi in Miami. There's a hurricane warning today for the Bahamas. Hurricane watches in South Florida. One Marine dead, eight others missing today after a military training exercise went terribly wrong off the coast of Southern California.
The Marines say 16 service members were inside this amphibious assault vehicle when it started taking on water. The Navy and Coast Guard are assisting in this search, which involves multiple helicopters and small boats from the larger Navy ships nearby.
That's Cammy McCormick reporting from the Pentagon this afternoon. Those $600 a week coronavirus-inspired unemployment checks, well, they run out today, and there are no signs from Congress yet that they're going to be able to reach a deal to extend the financial lifeline. We'll see what happens next week. President Trump's coronavirus task force testifying today on Capitol Hill, CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield.
We are 7 months into this global pandemic, and it is with great humility that I share with you, this is the most complex public health response this nation has undertaken in more than a century.
Dr. Anthony Fauci with the National Institutes of Health sounding upbeat, though, on the prospects of a COVID-19 vaccine.
There's never a guarantee that you're going to get a safe and effective vaccine. But from everything we've seen now in the animal data, as well as the early human data, we feel cautiously optimistic that we will have a vaccine by the end of this year and as we go into 2021.
The FDA says it would approve a coronavirus vaccine that's only about 50% effective, so long as it's safe. Commissioner Stephen Hahn says two dozen companies around the world are now working on a vaccine. The president is clarifying his tweet from yesterday that sent shockwaves throughout the political universe. Perhaps you heard, has to do with the November election and his thoughts on delaying it.
I don't want to delay. I want to have the election. But I also don't want to have to wait for 3 months and then find out that the ballots are all missing. And the election doesn't mean anything.
The president again railed against mail-in voting, even though that's the way he casts his ballot as an official resident of the state of Florida.
I don't want to see a crooked election. This election will be the most rigged election in history if that happens.
Bill McGurn with the Wall Street Journal says the president is notorious for his headline-generating tweets, but he also thinks he might be onto something here.
It just seems to me he takes a big meaty bone and he throws it off in an area and everyone goes running after it. It's not going to happen because of the law, but I think there are some legitimate complaints about possible fraud, about what happens if all across the country we get competing versions of results. That's not a good thing for democracy.
The U.S. Postal System warns due to budget restraints in the COVID era, there could be glitches and delays with mail-in voting this November. Ellen DeGeneres is apologizing. The 62-year-old TV star wrote in a letter to her employees today that she is disappointed to learn that it is not a place of happiness and respect. DeGeneres went on to say that she is working alongside Warner Brothers to conduct an internal investigation and correct all outstanding issues. This comes after BuzzFeed published an article earlier this month about employees saying they were experiencing racism while on that show. The NBA bounced back into action last night.
Yeah, he can make decisions if he wants.
The call on TNT as the NBA returned in the bubble in Orlando. The league got the reboot at ESPN's Wide World of Sports Complex in Disney World. LeBron James said after his game that it is more than just basketball. It's more than just basketball indeed, he said.
We understand what's going on in society right now, and we're using this NBA platform as the players, as the coaches, as organizations to continue to stand strong on that.
Before the game, all the players took a knee during the national anthem. Players and coaches were also wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts. We'll have more on the games in sports with Sonny coming up. Also ahead on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, New York schools submit their plans today. Pennsylvania politician taking on the governor and Johnson City's bookmobile.
Good afternoon. The weekend is upon us, and it's looking to be a 50-50 affair weather-wise. I'll explain in the forecast coming up shortly.
All right. Thank you very much, Kevin. Checking the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania today. Well, today is the deadline for New York school districts, all 700 of them, to submit their reopening plans to the state.
I believe we are 99% completed with the T's crossed, the I's dotted.
That's Niagara Falls Superintendent Mark Laurie.
We know there are going to be families that are going to have child care issues with a hybrid return to school. Some people completely disagree with the fact that we should be returning at all. They think we should stay remote until there's a vaccination. And the third part of it is some people think that this is a bunch of malarkey and we should be returning in full.
Jeff Quemall is president of the Cheektowaga Central Teachers Union.
There are many people that are very concerned. The unknowing, I think, is the biggest problem.
Governor Cuomo will decide next week the fate of public education in New York. Jeff Rusak with WKBW-TV in Buffalo.
What's going to happen to my kid this fall? It's a big question, one your school district is working to answer. These school reopen plans don't mean schools have to choose whether or not they will fully open, remain with remote classes, or do a hybrid of the two right now. Districts like Orchard Park and Lancaster are making plans for all three. Upwards of a quarter of the parents said they wouldn't send their students back until there was a COVID-19 vaccine.
Meantime, there is growing concern that school districts across the state might not have enough substitute teachers for the fall. That part of the story from Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Yeah, school officials say they expect an increased demand for substitutes this year. Many school districts will place students in small groups, known as pods, to keep them together for the whole year and limit the spread of COVID-19. Now, this has led to some concerns that allowing substitute teachers into those pods could put those kids at risk. Some districts plan to have other staff members, like librarians, fill in as substitutes if there is a shortage. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. A new poll today shows President Trump is trailing Democrat Joe Biden in Pennsylvania by 9 points. That survey from Franklin and Marshall College has Biden up 50-41% with 94 days to go before the election. The poll also found that fewer voters remain undecided or plan to vote for a third-party candidate than they did 4 years ago. With New York State facing a $14 billion deficit, that's $14 billion with a B, there are efforts in Albany to impose a wealth tax on the super rich.
We need to basically utilize every tool in our kit to try to generate revenue right now.
That's Fred Kowal with the United University Professions.
The idea of taxing the wealthiest and utilizing that to inject money into an economy that desperately needs it, that's the way to go.
The millionaire's tax, as it's also known, has been tried before and has also failed before in New York. Republican Senator Robert Ort of Niagara Falls says all this will do is drive more people out of the Empire State. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state's economy is too murky to move ahead with sweeping new climate change legislation. He wants to borrow $3 billion to fund environmental restoration projects all across the state. But COVID-19 has decimated the state's economy, so much that the governor has pulled the plug on the climate change bond proposal. It was to appear on the ballot this November, but it will not be this year. Former Central New York Congresswoman Claudia Tenney was in Binghamton Thursday, sounding off on the defund police movement across the country.
What that does is actually takes away the ability of police officers to do their job, very dangerous job.
Tenney, who is running for her old seat again against Democratic incumbent Anthony Brindisi, says police need to be held accountable for their actions, but taking away money from them to do their jobs, well, that's just not the answer, says Claudia Tenney. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf wants the state house to censure Republican Representative Russ Diamond for what he said on social media. Diamond said people who are not wearing masks are being targeted and harassed. He also said the state is overreaching in its response to COVID-19. The governor says Diamond is spreading misinformation and calls his criticism a thinly veiled attack against the state health director, Dr. Rachel Levine, who is transgendered. Diamond has called on Wolf, and Levine for that matter, to resign for their management of the pandemic in Pennsylvania. Governor Wolf took his thank you tour to Lancaster County Thursday to give first responders a pat on the back.
I am here to say thank you.
The governor shining spotlight on the men and women who volunteer at fire departments and ambulance services.
EMS all over the Commonwealth have responded really bravely and amazingly to this COVID crisis.
But the governor didn't just bring compliments, he also brought cash, a $50 million grant program that will help first responders whose fundraisers, like carnivals, have been canceled due to COVID.
They've had to do all kinds of things to adapt.
Volunteer EMS and firefighters respond to nearly 1 million calls a year in Pennsylvania. Fire Commissioner Bruce Trago says the stress that goes along with the job, well, it's seldom acknowledged.
Suck it up, kid. That's part of the job.
Trago says that was the prevailing attitude, and he is working to change that because well over 100 first responders commit suicide every year in Pennsylvania.
Collectively, we must eliminate that stigma and see that it does not become part of our new normal.
The deadline for fire and ambulance services to apply for that $50 million grant is August 7th. Safety protocols are in place as Buffalo gets ready for big league baseball next month. Local officials say the teams will not be allowed to leave their hotels unless they're going to Salem Field for the games or to the airport to leave.
Major League Baseball is taking this very seriously with regards to how frequent and how much the players are exposed to general public. And it does feel like it's going to be a very limited exposure, if any at all.
Dr. Joseph Chow at Western New York Immediate Care says the players know how important it is to protect themselves and the communities that they're playing in.
You can see where one player can spread to multiple players in a small confined area, and that could potentially, you know, put their entire season or their team at jeopardy.
The Toronto Blue Jays are playing their home games in Buffalo after Canada said the team could not play north of the border due to safety concerns. A popular amusement park in western New York will not be opening this summer. Seabreeze, north of Rochester on Lake Ontario, will be shut down due to COVID concerns. It is the first time in 141 years that Seabreeze will be silent for the summer. Let's talk more sports next. The COVID continues in professional baseball. Two-minute drill with Sonny Delphia.
Yeah, Bob, Major League Baseball postponing this afternoon's game between the St. Louis Cardinals and Milwaukee Brewers after multiple Cardinals players tested positive for the coronavirus. Concerning, says ESPN's Jessica Mendoza.
St. Louis Cardinals were just in Minnesota, so now you start to look at the Twins, and they're going to start to get tested. If there's any positive results that come out in the next few days from them, but again, it's waiting and not knowing. The Twins are going to be playing today. This is where it gets scary.
ESPN reporting MLB's quick quick decision comes after an outbreak in Miami that has 19 members of the Marlins organization testing positive over the past several days. Now six teams have been sidelined by COVID-19. The Brewers and Cardinals join the Marlins, Phillies, Nationals, and the Toronto Blue Jays. The Blue Jays and Phillies have postponed their weekend series after concerns over the spread of the virus after two Philadelphia staffers tested positive for COVID-19. NFL news, the Buffalo Bills have sent their rookies home after two more players tested positive for the virus. Five Bills have now tested positive since the rookies arrived in camp July 21st, and the rookies will now hold training camp remotely. There's no word how long the rookies will have virtual camp. In the first NBA game since Rudy Gobert's positive coronavirus test shut down the season back on March 11th, the Jazz big man scored the first points of the league's restart and sealed Utah's 106-104 win against New Orleans by sinking two free throws with 6.9 seconds left. LeBron James followed his own miss with the go-ahead basket 13 seconds remaining as the Lakers beat the Clippers 103-101. Major League Baseball, here comes the Judge.
3-1, and there goes Aaron Judge doing what he does best, hitting the ball out of the ballpark.
Aaron Judge with a 3-run homer in the Yankees' 8-6 win against the Baltimore Orioles. Shane Bieber strikes out 13 twins in Cleveland's 2-0 win against Minnesota. And Christian Vasquez homered twice in the Red Sox 4-2 win against the Mets. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiet.
All right, Sonny, have yourself a wonderful weekend. Thank you very much, sir. And still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, we'll take you to Ferguson, Missouri. Remember that city? Some developments there today. The best beaches in America for all you beach bums out there. And a trip inside as well today to Letchworth State Park in upstate New York. So much to see and do there. It's our staycation destination this Friday. And the story after this.
One thing we know from history, the future belongs to the fertile. A new study suggests that the world as we know it might not have a future. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. A recent BBC headline claimed that the world is facing a, quote, jaw-dropping global crash. Not an economic crash, mind you, a crash in the birth rate. Citing a new study by the University of Washington, the BBC article claims that falling fertility rates mean nearly every country could have shrinking populations by the end of the century. In fact, according to the article, 23 countries like Spain, Portugal, Japan, South Korea could see their populations cut in half by the year 2100. A few suggested explanations for the drop, according to the BBC article, include more women in education and in work, and greater access to contraception, which of course leads to women choosing to have fewer children. Of course, the BBC was also careful to offer a required nod to climate change, suggesting that fewer people could result in lower carbon emissions and could therefore help heal the planet. In truth, however, the whole scenario is far from rosy. I think it's incredibly hard to think this through and recognize how big a thing this population crash is, says University of Washington professor Christopher Murray. It's extraordinary. We'll have to reorganize societies, he said. In his book, What to Expect When No One's Expecting, Weekly Standard digital editor Jonathan Lass suggests that any country in which citizens aren't having enough babies can look forward to long-term economic stagnation and social deterioration. After all, children are the economic engines of the future, both tomorrow's labor force and tomorrow's consumer. Professor Murray described it this way to the BBC. Who pays tax in a massively aged world? Who pays for health care for the elderly? Who looks after the elderly? Will people still be able to retire from work? Writing at the Gospel Coalition, Philip Jenkins describes yet another vicious circle which entwines a civilization dealing with an increase in secularization and a decline in fertility. Increased fertility is often associated with traditional religious beliefs, but as more believers accept secular ideas about sex and family and the purpose of life, their connection to religious institutions weakens. Shrinking religious institutions, in turn, leads to increased secularization. And the cycle goes on. You see, babies have this unique ability to make adults care about the future and even think beyond their own lifetimes. That's true for individuals, and it's true for whole societies. Babies incline people to save, to invest, to sacrifice, and most importantly, to defer gratification. Even when it comes to the environment, the best reason to steward the planet is so that our children and grandchildren can enjoy its fruits. Christians should always encourage those government policies that make it easier for couples to choose life. But we also need to help people think more clearly about the whole issue. First, we have to debunk that overpopulation myth that should have died decades ago. The latest What Would You Say video tackles this question. Watch it, learn the key points, and share it with your friends and family. You can find it at whatwouldyousay.org. Second, Christians have to take the lead in taking seriously God's never revoked command to be fruitful and multiply, and the psalmist's exhortation that children are a heritage from the Lord, and Jesus' command to let the little children come to Jesus, which of course means there has to be children in the first place. After all, what greater gift can we offer this world and the world to come, other than Jesus himself, of course, than future generations of image bearers? For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
The weekend is here. Kevin Williams has that forecast next.
Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Nice by and large. Sunshine, clouds, and isolated shower thunderstorm in parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania. High in the lower 80s. But today, partly cloudy to clear, low in the low 60s. Tomorrow, sun and clouds, high temperatures, low 80s. And then rather cloudy tomorrow night and Sunday with showers and thunderstorms moving into the area. There could be some hefty rains in northwest Pennsylvania and far western New York. High temperatures Sunday in the low to mid 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price, and here's what's going on this Friday afternoon, the 31st of July, the last day of the month. Big storm brewing in the Atlantic today. Hurricane warnings in effect for the Bahamas. Hurricane watches in southern Florida. Isamias could be a Cat 2 storm when it reaches the Florida coast. Meteorologist David Parkinson says the storm will travel up the eastern seaboard next week.
There is decent chances here for a more inland track, which would, on one hand, give you a little bit less strong of a storm because the center wouldn't necessarily be over water, but it does mean you would have stronger impacts in places like Washington, Philadelphia, New York, and Boston.
We'll see where it goes. One Marine dead, 8 others missing after a training accident off the coast of Southern California. The Marine Corps says 15 Marines and one sailor were inside the amphibious assault vehicle when it began taking on water last night near San Clemente Island. With the nation's coronavirus infection rate soaring to 4.5 million now, President Trump is still calling on the nation's schools to reopen on schedule.
Young people are almost immune to this disease. The younger, the better.
The schools in New York are facing a deadline today to submit their reopening plans. This teacher says she's not going back until there's a vaccine.
I love those kids and where I taught and what I did, but I'm not quite willing to die for them.
But CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield says there's a big downside to keeping the students away.
7.1 million kids get their mental health service in schools. They get nutritional support, as we mentioned, from schools. We're seeing an increase in drug use disorder as well as suicide in the adolescents individuals.
Governor Cuomo deciding again next week whether he'll permit in-person learning. The head of the National Institutes of Health and the point man on this pandemic, Dr. Anthony Fauci, told Congress again today that he is cautiously optimistic about a COVID vaccine this winter. After Oregon's Governor Kate Brown announced a truce with Vice President Pence to remove federal troops from the streets of Portland, there was a dramatic change last night. We hear about it from Michael Kastner in Portland.
What a difference a day makes. A demonstration was held in front of the U.S. courthouse in Portland Thursday night, but there was no intervention by police. Some people in the group lit fires, but others put them out. When people tried to climb the fence in front of the courthouse, the group told them to get down. The demonstrators call for federal forces to go home. Oregon State Police have taken over outside security at the courthouse, but didn't take any action against the crowd. There's no sign of any of the federal officers. Michael Kastner, Portland, Oregon.
On-air clash last night. MSNBC's interview with a Georgia state representative has gone viral. The anchorman, Craig Melvin, asking Vernon Jones, who is African-American, if he is a paid surrogate of the Trump campaign.
Are you a paid campaign surrogate? Are you being compensated?
Now, let me be clear. You get paid to shape a liberal narrative. You get paid to attack this president. I don't get a dime from the campaign. Everything I've done is in me and based on my principles.
It is not the first time that MSNBC has asked black Trump supporters if they're paid surrogates of the president.
In exchange for your blind support of this administration or helping his campaign, on the record, can you tell us if he's ever promised you anything financially or otherwise?
No.
Jones says the cynical line of questioning at MSNBC is meant to intimidate. Plain and simple.
African Americans with independent voices, with conservative leanings, there's no place for them and they're pushed out. And when you attempt to come off that plantation, they use their agent provocateurs to whip you back on, call you a sellout.
Jones says black Americans are not monolithic, and Democrats who take their vote for granted do so at their own peril. The U.S. is pressuring Pakistan to change its harsh and cruel blasphemy laws after an American was killed there this week. The 57-year-old man was shot to death inside a courtroom by a 19-year-old local resident who said the Prophet Muhammad came to him in a dream and told him to kill that American. Jobless benefits expire today for millions of out-of-work Americans. The question is, can Congress come together to extend a financial lifeline?
Leaders from both sides negotiated late into the night, trading offers, but they left without a deal. And so that $600 federal jobless benefit, it appears, will expire today.
Correspondent Nancy Cordes, America's first face transplant recipient, has died. Officials at the Cleveland Clinic say Connie Culp passed away at the age of 57. She underwent a near total face transplant at that clinic back in 2008 to repair damage from a shooting. She had been the longest living face transplant patient anywhere in the world. The police officer who shot and killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, is not going to be charged.
The 2014 shooting sparked protest in the St. Louis suburb and gave way to the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement. A grand jury and federal investigators cleared Darren Wilson of the shooting, but the St. Louis County prosecutor took up the case again.
The question of whether we can prove a case at trial is different than clearing him of any and all wrongdoing. There are so many points at which Darren Wilson could have handled the situation differently. And if he had, Michael Brown might still be alive.
Prosecutor Wesley Bell explained he decided not to bring charges because the case couldn't be proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Two senators urging the Justice Department to investigate TikTok and Zoom. Missouri Republican Josh Hawley and Connecticut Democrat Richard Blumenthal say they have concerns with those companies. They've noted reports that TikTok and Zoom potentially disclosed private data about Americans to the People's Republic of China. New survey today says the best beach in America is in Sarasota County, Florida. Siesta Beach ranks number one on TripAdvisor's annual survey. 8 of the top 25 beaches are in Florida. Others are in Hawaii, California, South Carolina, and New England. It's 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report.
Tracy Lynn, and this is our summer-long staycation destination series. Every Friday during the Noon Report, we'll spotlight a staycation destination that's not far from home and won't break the bank. This week, we're taking you to Letchworth State Park in western New York.
My name is Elijah Kruger. My title is Environmental Educator.
So, Elijah, Letchworth State Park is a destination that offers numerous waterfalls and plenty of commanding views. Would you briefly tell us about the types of trails that Letchworth offers to visitors?
Sure. By far the most popular trail in the park is the Gorge Trail. It walks you by all three of the major waterfalls in the park. anyone that's just got a little bit of time to spend in the park, that's always where we send them to get the best experience in a short amount of time. But we've got lots and lots of trails that will walk you through the woods to some pretty unique habitats. We've got 70 miles or more of trail total in the park.
There are several entrance ways to the park. Would you tell us something distinct about the main ones?
Yeah, there are five entrances total into Letchworth State Park. Four are on the west side of the park, the west side of the Genesee River. One is on the east side. We call the parade grounds entrance. And we consider the east side of the park the more rustic side. It's not nearly as visited by patrons here in the park. Many of our visitors that come from Rochester or areas north of the park often use the Mount Morris entrance gate. When entering there, you're nearby the swimming pool. The Mount Morris Dam is at the north end of the park as well. The Perry entrance is closest to our campground. Heading a little bit further south, the Castile and Portageville entrances, both at the south end of the park, would both get you into the sort of southwest corner, what we refer to as the heart of the park. And either entrance gives you quick access to the Humphrey Nature Center, the Glen Iris Inn, the William Pryor Letchworth Museum, the Gorge Trail, and all three of the big waterfalls in the park.
And that's the area where the park really started, because it was originally a private home.
Yes, William Pryor Letchworth donated his land in the early 1900s. Originally, it was his 1,000-acre estate that he donated to the state of New York to be kept as public parkland. And that 1,000 acres included the three major waterfalls, what we call Upper Falls, Middle Falls, and Lower Falls. And over the years, the state has continued to purchase more land further north along the Genesee River. So by now, we comprise just over 14,000 acres. I believe we're the top five state park in New York in terms of land area.
Elijah, I know there's some structures there that were built by members of the Civilian Conservation Corps back in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, there were actually a total of four Civilian Conservation Corps, or CCC, camps here in the park. They were doing work here in the park between 1933 and 1941. And they were responsible for building a lot of the picnic shelters that you still see today and still are able to use in the park. There are some really neat stone-top picnic tables, the stones of which they quarried right here in the park. There are lots and lots of stone walls. The CCC here in Letchworth, as well as many other places, are well known for their great masonry work. And the cabins they built here in the park for us, as well as the Lower Falls Footbridge Trail, which spans the Genesee River. There still are some camp remnants still available. The park has done a good job of maintaining at least some of the chimneys from the old barracks that were there. So some of our trails, you can walk and see some of these historic relics from the CCC. What's kind of interesting, of course, the CCC program ended essentially when the U.S. entered World War II. So one of the CCC camps here in Letchworth, the Lower Falls camp, was actually converted to a German prisoner of war camp. And when you go down and visit the area of where the Lower Falls camp was located, there's an interpretive sign that tells you all about that kind of history, and actually laid out in the field are lettered blocks where you can kind of map together for yourself how that camp would have been laid out.
Elijah, Letchworth has been called the Grand Canyon of the East and was recently named this year's top state park in America. Where can people find out more about Letchworth State Park?
If you go to www.parks.ny.gov and search for Letchworth State Park, you can find park updates, any trail maps you might need, and any other information that you might be looking for about the park.
We hope you've enjoyed coming along on our staycation destination. You can hear all the podcasts online. Join us next week as we visit a new destination in Pennsylvania.
All right, fascinating stuff. Thank you, Tracy. And you can download all of Tracy's staycation destination feature reports on our website at fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We head into the weekend with some pretty fine weather overall. Your Friday night and your Saturday look generally fair and pleasant, but a vigorous disturbance will bring in some showers and thunderstorms to parts of the area Saturday night into Sunday. So Saturday is the big day for those outdoor plans. Meanwhile, Hurricane Isaias continues to bear watching as it moves toward the southern Bahamas and the east coast of Florida and perhaps up the eastern seaboard over the days ahead. We'll watch that closely. But for this afternoon, nice by and large, sunshine, clouds, and isolated shower and thunderstorm in parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania, high in the lower 80s. With an eye partly cloudy to clear, a low in the low 60s. Tomorrow, sun and clouds, high temperatures, low 80s. And then rather cloudy tomorrow night and Sunday with showers and thunderstorms moving into the area. There could be some hefty rains in northwest Pennsylvania and far western New York. High temperatures Sunday in the low to mid 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Finally at noon, keep calm and read on. Johnson City, New York's Bookmobile hit the streets this week to encourage summertime reading in the Binghamton region.
The Bookmobile is a transformed bus that we have had running around to different locations in Johnson City throughout the last 8 years.
Bethany Earle is a reading instructor in Johnson City. She says basically this Bookmobile is nothing more than a library on wheels.
They come on, they check a book out just like they would at the library, but there's no card or anything like that, no due dates, and then they can return it the following week or whenever they make a chance back to getting back on the bus.
But the Bookmobile holds extra significance this summer since the kids ended the school year virtually. Many might not have held an actual book in many months.
I think kids have a lot of time, and especially with the closure, they were doing a lot of electronic reading, and there's just something, you know, tangible about holding that book in your hand and, you know, kind of connecting with those pages.
Watch out, kids. Here comes the Bookmobile hitting the streets of Johnson City every Tuesday through the end of August. That's the world we live in this Friday, the last day of July. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.